Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
When did you know that?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield, and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
The last time we spoke to our World Service members, Ken was painstakingly working through his footwear options to get through the snow, slog through the snow to John O'Shea's unveiling as Republic of Ireland interim manager, which was set for the not universally popular time of 4 p.m. last Friday afternoon. Mercifully, the weather got so inclement that the FAI postponed the press conference until 2:30 today. And that is where Ken is headed later in Monday's Second Captain's Football podcast. Hey, Ken. Hey, Murph.
Hey, how you doing? How's it going?
A relief not to have to slog through the snow on Friday again.
Well, I mean, I would have made it for Ireland. I would have done it.
For John O'Shea and for Ireland.
I would have done it. Every day that Ken doesn't have to leave the house is a little victory. So Friday was a crushing win for Team Early. No pants again today.
Look, it was okay. I accepted that, you know.
No,
for
you moaned about it a little bit, but then you also realised there was a job of work to be done.
Yeah.
And you were happy to do it.
You know, just
well, not happy to do it, but.
I stumbled across a text message exchange that I had with John O'Shea.
Oh, wow.
Interim.
There we go.
Manager was around our Game That Changed My Life interview last year again. A few years back. It was 2020. Just the last one was basically me telling John, I'm sure it's okay to reveal this. It's not a major GDPR breach.
Okay.
I just told him thanks again for doing the chat. There'd been a bit of to and froing, a cancellation. And then there were some technical issues or whatever. But anyway, really enjoyed the chat yesterday, John. We'll put it out on the podcast next week. Thanks again for doing it, I said.
Wow.
John replies. John O'Shea. So normally you get a thumbs up or no problem at all. Happy to do it.
Yeah.
No, John O'Shea goes one step further. Good stuff. Glad we got it sorted eventually. All okay with the sound in the end?
Wow.
That's just John O'Shea right there. Just making sure the sound's okay. We can do it again.
Just give him the fucking job. Come on. Come on, people. What are we looking for?
Yeah. So here's the plan. We record the report on sport.
You didn't reply to that message, I presume.
Yep, clear as a bell, I said.
How do you reply to that?
The trail runs cold. We're going to record report on sport, chat to Mark Critchley and John Bruin about the Manchester Derby. Then, Ken, you go to the press conference and dial in from there at the end of the show. This actually sounds like a job for the teleporter. Have we got it going? Ooh. It hasn't been used for
Died
a while.
Died on its arse there, didn't it?
Yeah. We'll do a bit of work on the teleporter. Hang on. Yeah, Brandon's just got the old screwdriver right there.
The rat we tried to teleport the first time out just got like atomized. But that's fine.
For all our coverage of the ongoing search for a new permanent Republic of Ireland manager, sign up to the World Service and Second Captain.
And other better reasons.
For €5 a month plus VAT report on sport, please, Ken.
Well, Alan, so, how are you getting on?
Good, yeah, how are you?
Good.
Enjoy the snow?
Yeah, it was short
and sweet.
Yeah,
it was a few hours of it.
It started to melt as soon as the email arrived from the FAI.
Yeah,
they could have actually probably staged it in the end, but it worked out okay for
them. Well, yeah. So there's a lot of people coming in on this ticket, isn't there?
There is. I would describe it as high powered.
John O'Shea has turned up mob handed.
Yeah. He comes correct.
Paddy McCarthy, Brian Carr, Glenn Whelan.
He rolls at least three deep.
This is a lot of staff for a two-match interim stint.
Oh, hold on. Where are you going with this?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
Brano was right. Is that what you're going
to
suggest?
It'll be interesting to see what they have to say. I suppose. I mean, I'm talking about something that's going to happen in, you know, less than 2 hours.
People have already heard the news that we're going to bring them later on, potentially in this very same podcast. So
yeah,
we can hope for that. But Brano, just to be clear on the record, did say last week straight away, this isn't interim. This is yeah, full time all the way. What about Slaven Bilic though?
Slaven Bilic.
Was it Gary Doyle reporting? Slaven Bilic was.
Yeah, it was Gary Doyle. I mean, I was obviously as surprised as anyone.
That
to
was
see
left field, all right.
Slaven Bilic linked. Why would we hire Slaven Bilic? Was the question that immediately came to my mind. You know, I just didn't really understand why we would do
it's
that.
It's a bit like the Gus Poyet idea. It's like Poyet. The Gus Poyet idea. Yeah. Hire a manager who's beaten you soundly. As Slaven Bilic did with Croatia. Wasn't he managing? He was managing Croatia in Euro 2012.
Yeah.
I remember a very warm embrace he had with Trapattoni in the pre-match press conference. The two of them were arm in arm, loving each other. There's a lot of respect there from Bilic towards Trap.
Well, Bilic, I mean, I think
that's not necessarily a reason to give him the Ireland job. respected Trapattoni. Sorry.
It's just that Slaven Bilic was, you know, had a good time as the manager of Croatia, you know, knocked England out of the Euros, yeah, memorably. That was in 2007. You know? It's a long time ago. Like, I know sometimes it doesn't feel like that long ago, but actually, it's a long
time
ago.
Didn't he get West Ham? Yeah, West Ham finished seventh under him. That was quite a while ago as well.
Yeah.
He was sacked by West Brom after drawing against Man City, which I thought was a bit like, sack him before the match if you're going to sack him. Yes. Well done on that amazing result that nobody saw coming, you're out of here.
But no sooner had the Slaven Bilic news come out than I think David Snade had a story, you know, Slaven Bilic has never heard of your country, was more or less the thrust of that. So I don't know if it's Slaven Bilic. I mean, again, it would just seem a bewildering. Why are we doing this? Is somebody watching just old episodes of the Premier League years and just writing down names they recognize? Because it doesn't, you know, it wouldn't make any sense. I mean, Stephen Bradley, I don't know if you saw, had some more quotes about this.
So last week, Bradley said it should be Duffer, which I tend to agree with.
Well, he's broadened out he's casting it a little bit wider to include a lot of young Irish coaches who he tells Dan McDonnell are as good as any in the world. I really genuinely believe that. Maybe we're not giving the credit because some of us are based here right now. Some are coaches, not managers at the moment, but I genuinely think we are up there with the best young coaches in the world. It all depends how we do our work. We've got potential. Glenn, Paddy, John O'Shea, myself, Damien Duff, Robbie Keane has gone and done his work. I'm sure I'm forgetting others. There are young and progressively thinking coaches that are really good at what they do. It's about us keeping pushing, wanting to be better. I think it's foolish to look anywhere else. He says, so if you look around, it's in a really good place in terms of young Irish managers and coaches that are pushing to be better. I think it's foolish to look anywhere else. We obviously identify with the country and what way this country needs to play. I think it's really important that we understand what Irish people want. I'm not saying we can't learn from outside. Of course we can. That's a given. There'll always be the exception, Trapattoni, the Trapattoni that's had an incredible career, and you have a chance to get him, you need to get him and learn from him. But as a whole, going forward, the Irish manager's job, in my opinion, should be Irish, because the quality is there, not just because they're Irish. So this is, I would definitely have more sympathy with that point of view than the, let's get Slaven Bilic in. I mean, are we serious? Like, what has Slaven Bilic done in the, you know, since beating England at Wembley in 2007? In 2007, to suggest that he is the man to entrust.
Listen, I think we haven't quite exited the kite flying stage of this managerial search.
Yeah, but then
some of the kites have gone up very weird.
Everyone keeps saying kite flying, but then at the same time, you hear the journalists saying that the FAI aren't leaking these names.
Yeah.
So it's not. I don't know if it's just as simple as the FAI are allowing these names to come out and seeing how they land.
No, I would be talking more about
from
agents,
the manager's side.
Agents are flying kites to be like, oh, Slaven Bilic is interested
in. But then Bilic's agent tells David Snade, no, so he's not going to be managing you guys.
Yeah, I mean,
there are kites being flown. There's been a lot of time for a lot of kites to be flown by a lot of potential kite flyers, it's true.
Yeah.
But is it Bilic one? I mean, he certainly plays a mean electric guitar. Well, I don't know, I've never heard his actual music, but See some photos of him playing. But apparently, music experts tell me that his choice of electric guitar is spot on, apparently, as well.
Really?
It's the good stuff, yeah. Well, like, as in the physical guitar that he plays is meant to be pretty good.
I think he's generally quite well liked, you know. It's like, gosh.
He's charismatic.
Good
yeah.
lad, you know. Yeah, he's a good lad.
He's got a bit of charisma.
But, yeah, I remember him talking to the Irish media after the... He was at the game we played against Hungary. Remember we played a terrible game against Hungary just before the Euros? We played this awful game. I think it was 0-0.
4 euro.
Yeah. It was like 2012, yeah. So we were in Monte Cattini in the...
Was it in the pissing rain?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like in a deluge. Yeah, yeah.
In this resort for Italian old ladies in Monte Cattini for a week. Then flew to Budapest and played in the old stadium there, which, I mean, they've obviously replaced all these kind of old stadiums with these incredible new Orban bowls. This was like an old sort of athletics track type bowl stadium. We played really badly in the rain. Slaven Bilic was there. We all went over to talk to him at the end, and he was just holding court. A lovely man. You know, he didn't sort of look at us and say, get away from me. He said, oh, yeah, of course, let me talk to you. And then, of course, a few days after that, his team thrashed our team in the Euros. I don't think I've seen him since, but I have followed his managerial career with not much interest, and he hasn't really done a whole lot. No. So,
like I said, West Ham for a period, but even that is his good West Ham early days are nearly a decade old now.
Yeah.
Since then, it's Al Ittihad, West Brom.
Yeah,
Beijing, Watford. Watford is like, a bit like Sunderland. It just shouldn't count either way. Every manager goes to Watford, yeah, they just yeah. disappear and get spat out the other side a few months later. But
yeah.
He's been over in, I think, Saudi Arabia recently. Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. But Maurizio Pochettino, maybe? Would he be? He's got the same birthday, it turns out, as Damien Duff. He was 52. Duff was 45. Maurizio Pochettino's team played against Brentford. And drew 2-2. The Chelsea fans ran through a series of songs. Roman Abramovich, they sang. And then they sang Fuck Off Maurizio. And then they sang Bowley. Well, they sang a song about Bowley as well, which was even worse. And then they sang about Jose Mourinho. So Roman Abramovich, Jose Mourinho, good. Maurizio Pochettino, Todd Bowley, not good. It was Pochettino asked afterwards what he thought about that. You know, is there a case of should the fans maybe support the team a bit more? Too? What do you think? If they want to listen, good. The performance has been good. If they want to listen, perfect. If not, what can I do? They'll keep booing. I'm giving my best, but we cannot blame the fans. My message is okay. They need to show their frustration. Through who? I prefer it to me rather than the team. I am strong. I'm sure in time we will change the perception. I'm not sure if it's going to happen. No. He could be in contention for the Ireland job pretty soon, is what I'm thinking. I don't know if you saw, there was a thing that happened over the weekend in Germany where Darmstadt lost.
Yeah. An ultra came on the pitch and started absolutely laying into all the players who stood around politely with teeth clenched.
Just taking it.
Yeah.
So a guy got down, like he, you know, he's one of the fans or whatever, and he came down and he absolutely was, like the team had gathered in front of him in a semicircle and he just raved at them for like nearly 2 minutes. And they all just stood there sort of like, yeah, yeah, you know, this guy is making some good points. You know?
And tactically,
because I don't have a pen and paper, we should be taking some of this down.
I mean, obviously the whole thing is hilarious because they've just lost 6-0 and they lost 6-0 to Augsburg, who are like, I think it was like Augsburg's second record, you know, their second biggest away win of all time. You know, it was kind of, whoa. You should not be losing 6-0 at home to these guys. But the players just have to suck it up, like, you know, we have to pretend to respect this person. And I feel that this could this is something I want to see happening at Chelsea pretty soon. I would like to see it, the camera peeping over the shoulder of the enraged Chelsea fan berating the players and Poch and everyone just having to stand there, maybe Bowley and Igbali as well, standing there in their coats, just listening to the whole thing. Yeah, you know, this is all part of the, it's all part of the show, you know? So I do think it's something that they could learn from. Anyway, we are going to be talking obviously about the Manchester Derby with John and Mark soon.
Don't think we talked to them about the Erling-Haaland miss of the century.
Well, Gary Lineker said it was the worst. He thought it was the worst miss he'd seen at this level.
Ronnie Rosenthal is the one that a lot of people were comparing it to.
Well, the thing is that Ronnie Rosenthal was kind of the gold standard miss for a long time. But really, it's not that bad a miss compared to the misses that you now see every week by virtue of the...
I don't know.
By virtue of the what were you going to say?
Well, the fact that like we can now just like sit there watching clips from like all the football all over the world and you get to see some really amazing misses. So, yeah. Such that almost the whole concept of a miss has been devalued. Because once you've seen some of these, you're like, you can't miss any worse than that. Like we are
well,
actually...
Well, I think the thing about Rosenthal is the fact that it was along the ground... Like with there is... always the prospect of a volley going wrong. There is something, you know, like a volley is a much harder skill to execute than literally just putting your foot through the ball while the ball is on the ground.
Yeah.
He'd gone around, I'm watching Rosenthal again, he'd gone around the goalkeeper and had to like, tap it in. It comes back off the crossbar.
Yeah, but you know, Nicholas Jackson did something like that in the Chelsea game. I mean, in terms of he went around the goalkeeper and then he didn't actually miss. He just hit the ball really weakly at the open goal and it was stopped by a defender.
But yeah, but he'd gone around the keeper. He was going away from the goal. Yeah. He's cutting it back across his body. I mean...
Rosenthal's even taken an extra touch to steady himself.
It bobbles a little bit.
There might be a slight
bobble. It's the pitches.
It was the 90s. The pitches, the ball's always bobbled. So you
and also, he's rounded the keeper. He doesn't have to hit it that hard. It's there. He can bobble all he likes. All he has to do is just like run with the ball.
He wanted to smash it in the roof.
I've stumbled on some Matt Letizia goals here.
The Haaland miss.
Say what you like about him. Bloody good footballer.
Was obviously insane. You know, just to see how. And that was the moment which he thought, well, I wonder could something actually happen here. Like, our City going to do. Remember, there was also a. A moment by De Bruyne who had a shot from the edge of the box where he absolutely, like, it's the worst shot I've ever seen him take. You know, like a 40 metres high and wide kind of thing. It's like, what was that? Like, have City just kind of, are they cracking up here? Because you could see in the game that they found it so easy to just pass the ball into United's penalty area and play around in there. And then just didn't seem to be able to get their shots off or were shooting wide. Or in Haaland's case, I mean, Foden heads it back across. It's like, obviously, this is a goal. And then amazingly, he misses.
But should he have headed it?
Well, I think the reason that he did what he did was that just before that, there had been a cross from Bernardo Silva. And he did try to sort of bend down and head it. So it was like just in the previous 2 minutes, he'd had one of those where you're kind of stooping down. And... It hadn't gone well, and I think he just thought I'm not going to do that this time, and then he jumped up and ended up just dinking it over the crossbar. I mean, it was incredible.
Missed a lot of big chances though. I'm waiting for the Erling Haaland BCM compilation to come along. He's streaking clear of Darwin Nunez at the top of the charts for big chances missed.
Yeah,
do you know how many he's got?
26.
You count that one. Well, you definitely will count that one.
Well,
for
we'll
sure.
count that one.
Nunez is in second place on 21 goals. Ollie Watkins on 18.
I mean, are they the top three? No, they're not.
Nunez isn't, but
like.
Haaland and I was looking down to see if there's a trend there. Certainly, Haaland and Watkins are, you know, Haaland's top and Watkins is up there as well for actual goals scored. It starts breaking in a little bit after that because Nicholas Jackson is number 4 for big chances missed.
Yeah.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin is number 5, so, you know.
It is, yeah, I mean, Calvert-Lewin is not having a good season. But, a lot of the secret of scoring goals is making lots of chances or getting lots of chances. And
not letting your head drop after missing those chances.
Yeah, which in France, you know, Haaland's not going to do. And you sort of even, you always thought that United scored too early in the game. You know, if they scored in the 88th minute instead of the 8th minute... that would be better, you know?
But they would have been possibly 3-0 down by then.
6-0 down by then.
Well, you know, it was obviously a brilliant goal, but they didn't do anything after that at all.
No.
And
I found the analysis of this game hilarious.
How do you mean?
I mean, Marcus Rashford sticks in a goal from 25 yards out. It's an absolutely brilliant goal. It's, you know, I don't know what the XG on it was, but it's...
Well, they were talking about that.
3% or
something. 0.3.
Yeah.
0.03.
I mean... Grant, so the goal goes in. Then all of a sudden, this is like a disciplined You know, United have come to City with a plan. You know, this is like one of the best away. No, it's not. Marcus Rashford scored a worldie, and it's immediately normal service has been resumed. United don't have a prayer. It's like two backs of four. Let's just lump it the second we get it,
yeah.
And maybe we might cash them on a counter attack. But we might score another miracle goal. Like the United offered absolutely nothing in the game. It was the exact same game, apart from this worldie, but it was like, oh, you know, City just can't find an answer yet. It's like, yeah, relax. Everyone just relax. City are going to win.
It did make it more
game.
Exciting to watch. So
oh, absolutely.
So I'm delighted that United scored that goal, in that at least it gave you. You still thought Liverpool, Man City should say, were obviously going to win. Like, everybody knew that was going to happen. But you still got some. And it made the Haaland miss even more hilarious, that there was something at stake at that stage, as opposed to them already being 3-0 upward.
But it was very funny, you know, the board goes up for injury time, 8 minutes, you know. United are 2-1 down. Every Man United fan is, oh, jeez, that's awful long. there was still time for them to get, like, a 5-1 defeat.
Well, the thing that surprised me was when that happened, when the 8 minutes went up, there was, like, you could hear the audible, the City fans being annoyed about it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I was thinking, don't worry, like there's nothing to worry about. But it wasn't interesting. It wasn't just in terms of like the City fans still feel that way.
Yeah,
you know, in the sense of they're
still nervous about like 2-1.
This is going to somehow bite us on the arse. This is what they were audibly concerned about at that point, and I was not concerned on their behalf in that situation. But and as it turned out, they obviously were the team who did score in the 8 minutes after Amrabat's.
I mean,
the Amrabat Casemiro axis is not one that I think they should be staking their future on at Manchester United.
No, I mean it was a bad day. It was a bad day for them. But yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit more a bit later. What else is going on? Oh yeah, well. The scandal of the City Ground. I saw you covering this, and you rode straight in there, yourself and Shay Given leading the charge against this.
You mean spotting the egregious?
What's the word? Corruption.
Spotting the egregious mistake by the referee.
Egregious.
I thought Shay Given did well. I got to be honest, Ken. You're giving me too much credit there. Mm. I didn't have a fucking clue what was going on, right? I was like, why is everyone going mental? Why is Stephen Reid going nuts?
Stephen Reid's been said no.
Why is the owner there? And Shay's like, yeah, it's because clearly there was a head injury a couple of minutes before and the ball was given back to Liverpool. Of course, Shay. We all know that.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying.
I was just checking.
Yeah.
It was a good spot because you could have been forgiven for thinking that it was a free kick. That he'd given to Liverpool at that point, even though when you saw on the replay, you could see that the main problem here is Konate, or it's Kelleher who kind of collides with Konate from one side as he's being challenged by Yates on the other side. And it was a head injury that he stopped the ball for, but I think Luis Diaz is the player who's out with Hudson-Odoi, and he immediately kicks the ball back to... as soon as he hears the whistle, he kind of runs up, kind of grabs the ball, kicks it back to Kelleher as though he thinks it's a free kick. Or whether he thinks it's a free kick or not, he's kicking it back to Kelleher. And it was as though that was just where the game restarted from. Whether the ref didn't notice or whether he thought... As Klopp pointed out afterwards, the same thing had actually happened in the first half, or a similar thing where there was a shot by Harvey Elliott maybe into the face of Yates.
Don't worry, a few Liverpool fans were in touch with me on that one too.
Yeah, and the ball and Tierney, the ref, blew it up. But at this point, there's a argument that, well, when he blew the whistle, the ball was still in the area, and if it's in the area, then you give it to the goalkeeper. Whereas if it's outside the area, as it was when he blew for this one, then it should be, you know, whatever. One way or the other, this is a mistake by the referee. How significant a mistake it is, though, I'm not sure. It seems a bit out of... The reaction seems out of proportion with the mistake. I mean, at the time, the Forest fans were not really thinking about it. It was only a little later that they all realised, like we did, Owen.
Yeah.
That they had actually...
Shay Given was the only one who seemed to understand in real time what was going on.
Yeah, it took them a while to realise that they were the victims of a refereeing error 2 minutes ago, which had caused all this. Because at the time of the... 99th minute goal. This is from a video recorded by one of the Forest fans. He's there looking across at the penalty area in front of them where this is happening. And you can hear the concerns that these Forest fans have. You can hear what they're talking about. You can hear the concerns. They're not talking about the ref. They're talking about something else. And you hear this. You hear the goal go in as this fan is saying the key phrase, which he then goes on to repeat more ruefully. But let's just hear. Clear the bastard ball. He's screaming, clear the bastard ball, literally as the ball is in the air from McAllister's foot onto the head of Darwin Núñez. Ugh. The ball, you can then hear the cheer from the Liverpool fans. And then there was actually a long silence, or a silence. You can hear some stadium noises. And he repeats sometime later, clear the bastard ball. How could we just not have cleared it? Because the thing, like, Forrest had numerous opportunities to clear, and in fact did clear it twice out of play. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, how big a deal is this? Like, imagine the ref had given a throw the wrong way or given a quarter that wasn't a quarter. You know, you've seen these are the types of things that happen.
Well, it's a big enough deal in that there probably wouldn't have been an equalizing goal if the correct decision had been made for the pitch. You don't know. That's why I said probably.
Well, you know, I mean, there could easily have been an equalizing goal.
It would have been a lot less likely if Nottingham Forest had possession of the ball instead of Liverpool getting possession of the ball uninterrupted at that stage. Like, I think it's easy to dismiss the Forest complaints because they have gone a little bit, you know, Mark Lattenberg's getting involved,
yeah,
for example. But I always think, if switch this around, Liverpool fans, calm down. A second, Liverpool fans, calm down. I know you're listening. I know you're saying, what, you and Shea Given can go and fucking do one. They should have cleared the bastard ball and that would have been that. I know that, right? But switch it around. If roles had been reversed, it happened exactly the opposite way and Liverpool had conceded a goal to Taiwo Awoniyi or something at the end.
Mm.
How do you think you would have been reacting? Yeah. Probably you would quite be as angry as the Forest fans at the moment.
Well, you know, this is the fact. I mean, we've seen Liverpool fans, as Brano pointed out here. there was sarcastic Forest on Twitter. Proper head loss at the City Ground tonight, but perfectly respectable members of society shouting, cheating scouts, come on, at the top of their voice. Been a while since I've seen that level of anger. And to which someone responds, short memories. 78 League Cup final replay. penalty given for foul outside the box. Not a peep out of you, Shower, then, was there? Revenge is a dish best served cold. Very, very cold in this case. It's 1978 League Cup final replay. Liverpool against Nottingham Forest at Old Trafford. I went back and looked at the incident.
Oh, did you?
I looked at the incident. It's John O'Hare, I think, is the Forest player running through. Phil Thompson is the Liverpool defender who chops him down like 2 inches outside the penalty area in a blatant, what is today an automatic red card. Like, he'd be walking off the pitch before O'Hare had even hit the ground. Like, in that time wasn't even a booking, right? You could just do that. For some reason, this match also, Ian Callaghan, the long-serving Liverpool player, picked up the first booking of his like 7,000 game career, and I couldn't understand it when I saw it, because he gets booked for basically for a block on a Forest player who's running past him in the Forest half, and Callaghan kind of runs across him and knocks him over. It's nowhere near as bad as that. I mean, Thompson has chopped the guy down who's running.
You're saying this as though he never have a clue what you're talking about.
Well, and he gets a yellow card for this, and the commentator's like, that's the first booking of his long and storied career. And, you know, just, I don't understand. But
so the referees were a disgrace.
Well, you chop a guy down 2 inches outside the box, like in the D, he's running through onto a through ball. It's just him and the goalkeeper, and Thompson trips him up, and then acts really outraged. No, and is pointing at like the line, going, oh, "That's where it should be. Not a penalty. Forrest scored the penalty anyway." This Liverpool fan was, you know, has been nursing a grudge for the last 46 years, and finally got the payoff. But you mentioned Clattenburg. I mean, I think this is not good.
Yeah.
So first of all, you had Marinakis running around Well, standing around, to be fair, standing around and glowering on the side. And this Marinakis is like not a guy you want to get in the bad side of. You know what I mean? He's a scary individual, this Nottingham Forest owner. Like, you know, he is, he's standing there kind of, apparently was, you know, going to remonstrate with the referees afterwards. Klattenberg came out into the mix zone and started talking to the journalists. Bizarre. And he said also that he tried to go into the referee's room, but the referee wouldn't let him. And I'm thinking, well, of course he didn't let you. What are you doing trying to go in there?
You were a referee quite recently, Klatz. Do you not remember that you wouldn't have taken too kindly to this sort of fairly inappropriate interference?
Oh, amazing stuff. And Klattenberg is like, then he explains the law, I mean, which people already, I suppose, no, or don't. It's kind of like, why do you need it explained? But he's kind of, the owner's quite upset because he's invested a lot of money in the football club and he wants to see results. He feels no decision has gone against the club, and quite rightly, he's upset. Everyone is sad they have lost in this way, and hopefully their luck will change in the future. So he then goes on to talk about the refereeing decisions, compares the two situations. If the referee is to stop the game for a head injury, if he feels there is one, he's rightly allowed to stop it. However, the ball has to go back to the team that has possession. Nottingham Forest clearly had that possession. He did exactly the same in the first half. However, it was a different situation. The ball was closer to the penalty area. Nottingham Forest was towards the corner flag. Nottingham, blah, 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 blah. Okay, what is this about? Like, it's about pressure. You know, it's about applying pressure to try and get refereeing decisions your way. And also, obviously, and to influence the media. I mean, we're talking about it right now. It was sort of reported on, Klattenberg is doing this. And I'm not sure if it was like all positive coverage. Oh, isn't it great? It's great to hear from Klattenberg. He made such great points. We were all convinced by what he had to say. Instead, it was like, this is a bit weird. I'm not sure about this. But Mike Dean was on Sky. And it was quite weird the way that he talked about it. Because on the one hand, he said, Paul Tierney has made a monumental error. Mm-hmm. And then in the same breath, he said, I'm not sure it really made that much difference because, you know, there were several phases of play and sort of, you know, so I don't know if it was but it was a monumental error. And you're like, those two things don't really.
I think he's trying to say what you're saying, though, no? Like that the error, he made a big error, but that still Nottingham Forest should have, you know, not scored. But again, the referee, I don't know why the refereeing analyst has to go on about everything that happened afterwards. It's his job to just tell you whether or not the refereeing decision was correct.
Yeah, well, Dino and Klatz are tight, you know. Hmm. We know this from Klatz, who isn't tight with all the refs.
No.
So he brought out a book a while back. What was it called? On the Whistle or whatever the fuck it was. Final Whistle, maybe. And he wasn't tight with, for instance, Graham Pohl. According to this article in the Mirror that I was reading, Graham Pohl had been one of Klattenberg's role models, but reported him to the PGMOL for arriving at a match with a man bag. Klattenberg's quote said, he said it was not appropriate for a referee. But what was appropriate? Did you have to dress like a fucking square? After that, I could not trust him.
Whistleblower, is the name of the book.
Whistleblower. So he fell out with Graham Pohl because Pohl reported him for arriving at a match with a man bag, it says here. Mm. Now, to me, Owen, that sounds like quite a trivial incident on both sides. It's like, it seems like there's been mountains being made out of molehills here on both sides. But what I suppose is it gives you an index of is just how little is required to cause a simmering grudge between two such giant egos as these guys. Now, Howard Webb, who we saw Klattenberg sitting with at the previous game when Forest played Man United, he says about Howard Webb, I did well for him at the... So apparently, Webb, meanwhile, got on Klattenberg's bad side by ignoring his calls to go to a party after a Euro 2012 match. So again, a kind of a personal slight, which, you know, is...
So Webb wouldn't go to a party that Klattenberg wanted to go to.
Klatz was like, let's go to this
Webb's
party.
Like, not if you're wearing that man bag, mate.
No. So Klattenberg, a wedge was driven that day in Euro 2012. I did well for him in the Euros as an additional referee. However, when Howard doesn't need you, he doesn't speak. He's very unique in this. Everyone sees Howard as a nice guy, and he is. I would never really criticize him as a person. He's just someone I won't engage with in the future because I don't need Howard Webb. The same as he doesn't need me, which is fine. Well, I mean, obviously how things change. You know, we end up we end up sitting next to Howard Webb, talking into his ear. But obviously Mike Dean in Sky was sort of echoing Clattenburg's point. This is the point I'm making. Clattenburg and Dean are kind of mates, and then Dean is sort of parroting, is that too much to say? He's definitely amplifying Clattenburg's take on this. This is a serious business.
Monumental.
Monumental. Dean was not... there was the Red Wine Club. This is Clattenburg again talking about the Red Wine Club. Yes, there was a Red Wine Club. Yes, you had to be selected to get in. This was the likes of Graham Pohl and Howard Webb. Klatt obviously wasn't part of the Red Wine Club. He was part of the more rock and roll group, which included Dowd, Phil Dowd, Klatt himself, that's himself, Wiley, Alan Wiley. That's the guy who Alex Ferguson said some referees in Europe are fit as butcher's dogs. This guy, look at this guy. That's Alan Wiley, isn't it? Wasn't that Alan Wiley?
I don't know, but in the last 5 minutes, I'm feeling physically ill.
What's the name
here.
Of this club? Did you say
Klatt?
The Moroccan
time,
Roll Club, not, did you say?
No, more rock. No, this is more rock and roll.
I thought it was like the Moroccan. I thought they might Moroccan have gone roll. To a Moroccan no. restaurant or something. No. Yeah,
Moroccan,
okay.
Moroccan roll.
And then listen to Slaven Bilic play guitar.
Yeah.
Don't say Klatt again.
Dermot Gallagher.
Keep saying Klatt.
Dermot Gallagher, who again, who else is on TV these days? Dermot Gallagher. And Dino. Right, so there's
Dermo and Dino.
Dermo and Dino. There's two of the regular TV ref analysts. We're in the club.
What about Walton?
With Klatt.
Did Walton rise above both factions?
Who's Walton?
Philip Walton. Philip Walton is a golfer. Irish Irish golfer. He's the guy on BT, isn't he? The referee on BT. On TNT Sports, rather, I should say.
Why
can't Peter Walton?
Peter Walton. Peter Walton.
Philip Walton. Yeah. Philip Walton would be a more entertaining TV person.
You can't trust Dermot Gallagher. I saw somebody say this a while ago. You can't trust Dermot Gallagher, a guy who would just disguise his accent like that for all those years. Remember his big reveal to Joe Malloy, where Joe was interviewed, where it was just suddenly he's got this amazing Dublin accent.
He's just making it easier for them to understand him.
Yeah,
you know, all these people had respect for each other. Says Klatt. There was no bitterness, no nastiness. It was after the Web era became worse and really political. So, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't think this is good, because obviously Forest having taken this step, then everyone will think they need one. You know, like everyone's getting a set piece coach now. Mm. Like Chelsea are like, oh, we need to get Brentford's set piece coach. Now it's like, well, these guys are going to be, there's going to be a transfer market in these guys pretty soon.
Peter Walton fires parting shot at bosses after being let go by TNT Sports. No. He believes that they will lose viewers to Sky Sports after ditching him from their coverage. Wow.
But Sky aren't showing football when TNT are. I mean, that's the whole... Yeah. There isn't really a competition there, is there?
Wow, yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
First of all, I'd like to welcome John Delaney here today.
Trying to be critical is well being possible.
Building a house, you build the foundations first. The chimney is atop. The chimney for us, it's international football.
As well to John Delaney,
The pleasure, the entertainment, the organisation, the skills that you take to everybody is fantastic.
But you don't have a chimney unless you've got a very strong foundations.
John Bruin and Mark Critchley on to talk about a Manchester derby that was won by the team that everybody knew was going to win, albeit there was some excitement on the way. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good, good, good. John, how's the form?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
At any point did you think that Manchester United were going to win that game, John?
No. United led, it was either 48 minutes or 58 minutes. And at no point did I think Manchester United would win that game. A game that I've seen before, it felt like.
How do you mean you've seen it before? I mean, an early goal, which We've seen them score early goals. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer specialised in this: score a goal first and then win the game. Sometimes they can't do that anymore.
Well, no. I mean, the thing is, okay, as a Manchester United fan, I yearn for the day when a Manchester United team will not turn up at the Etihad, the Emirates or Anfield and just pitch in and sit in and hope for the best. Small margins, Eric Ten Hag used as his description of the game. That was his opening gambit. On Sky, that was. Small margins is a new vogue of excuse. You've probably heard it. I imagine Stephen Kenny might have put this one out there a few times. Because football managers never lose these days, do they? You can never see. It's small margin. There were small margins last week when to Chelsea lost to Liverpool the previous week, despite the fact that they stopped playing in extra time. But not to relitigate that. What I'm saying is, the margins, if you look at the stats, you actually watch the game, the margins were huge. And the margin is that Manchester City have a team that struck fear into a Manchester United team. A Manchester United team that was under strength, okay. They've lost the entire left side of the defence. But they just played with fear.
Rightfully so, though, John. Rightfully so. I mean, they get a goal and they kind of have to shut up shop. If they keep gunslinging with Manchester City, it's going to end a lot more grisly than it
well,
is.
Well, it's going to end up with a score of 4-1 rather than 3-1. I mean, you know.
Maybe five, maybe six.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, okay, if you were big Sir Jim Ratcliffe, right, and you've put $1.5 billion in and you want to put more in, what do you want from your team in a game like that? What do you want to say to your other billionaires about your team when it shows up at the Etihad and it delivers that kind of performance? And at the actual nub of this, what I'm trying to say is, I think Ten Hag's done, because I think that was a cowardly performance from United. There are mitigating circumstances. Let's not totally dismiss those. But to turn up with that as the plan of just hanging on like you're a League One team and hoping that you'll score a goal on the break, which they did, and then getting gubbed in the last 30 minutes. Well, if we're going into this era of high performance, big Sir Jim, he's going to expect better than that, isn't he?
This is really harsh stuff from John, Mark. He's described Manchester United as cowardly. But, you know, as Eric Ten Hag said, there were small margins. I mean, what did you think of... There could have been the pivotal moment of the game, arguably, was Manu ball through to Marcus Rashford. He's scorching down the left side. It's an ideal Marcus Rashford situation. Kyle Walker catches up with him. What's your reading of the events that followed?
Of the decision itself, I don't think United can have too many complaints about it. I think, look, it's weird. It's one of those... It's the kind of incident that might get pulled up if it actually wasn't as important an incident as it was, if you like. I think if it probably happens further back the pitch with players in front of them, then you look at that and you think maybe that's a foul. He has kind of, there's contact there and he's pulled him back. But look, I don't think that's the reason why United lost the game. I think I have a little bit more sympathy than John, to be honest. I think there's an element of going into that game yesterday where the priority is damage limitation, and the question is, what else can United really do? You have eight players out injured.
Not first team players. I mean, they're missing three of their first team.
Well, so Shaw, Martinez,
Hoyland.
Hoyland. I mean, Mason Mount's a pretty good player.
Come on,
hasn't been around this season.
Come on, Mason Mount is not.
Who has £60 million on him?
I know, but nobody has Mason Mount in their first team. You know, no one is like, oh, we're missing Mount. You know, how can we possibly do it?
Okay, but even if they have Mason Mount and the other players that are out injured, then maybe they're not bringing on Willy Campbell and Omari Fawcett and players like that.
It's true. It affects the quality of the 16.
I feel like I'm being. I'm not trying to be too defensive around United's performance, honestly. I have some sympathy for the argument that, like, what else can they do? But I think at the same time, the other side of that equation is, when you take the approach that they take yesterday, absolutely everything has to go right. And so, yes, what else can you do? But what else do you actually expect to happen? I think that first half was, it was almost like, you know, if you ran it 100 times, you found the one in 100 where they went in ahead. And, you know, Sky's half-time coverage was, it was all about how unlikely Rashford's goal was and how unlikely Haaland's miss just before half-time was, in a sense. Just how lucky United had been to get in with that result at half time. And I was looking, just because the game was so, it felt like, you know, watching a lot of teams come up against City and how they approach City. I had a look after the game yesterday, you know, that action zone stat, you know, where it splits the pitch up into thirds, and it's criminally underused stat in my opinion, but I looked at it yesterday, more than half of the game was played in United's defensive third, 53%. And I thought, it's like any team, I couldn't think of any team that's been, you know, parked, who City have had that kind of territorial dominance against. I tried to find if there was any team, and it was, the only one that comes close is Championship relegation candidates Huddersfield Town in the FA Cup third round. So John mentioned playing like a League One side. I mean, they're not quite a League One side yet. They might stay up Huddersfield, but that was literally the approach yesterday. And I think, you know, they were dominated more in that respect. I compared it with Solskjaer's games, with his wins at the Etihad, and City were even more dominant than in those. So it's not like this is like the way to play against City. I think, like, there was, what I keep coming back to is, there was a moment in the second half just before City's equaliser where United had this spell of settled possession, and it was like they were on the ball, they were 30 yards further up the pitch than they had been all game. It's something that you hadn't seen for like 55 minutes, never saw it again afterwards. And it was the one point in the game where I realised, wait a minute, these two teams, they're supposed to be something approaching equals. And that was totally out of character for the rest of the game. And I think, like I say, when you're United and you come with that approach, everything has to go right for you. So, yes, what can you do? But actually, what else can you really expect to happen?
Yeah, and, you know, the other surprising statistic about it was they had two shots, which was the fewest any team has had against City in any Premier League game this season. So this was like, you know, obviously the first one of those shots was very good. So they got off to a good start, and then what followed was extremely disappointing. And one of the reasons I think it was disappointing was the man who scored with that first incredible shot. What do you make of Marcus Rashford? I mean, we mentioned the you know, maybe foul by Kyle Walker, but I couldn't believe how badly he played after the.
Confidence should have been up, you would have thought, after banging that one in early on. Yeah.
Everything he did after that was wrong. So, you know, he had like there was one where he was through, he messed up the header.
Tried to head it forward, yeah.
Walker caught him on that, then he missed the ball as the ball sort of came across, and then there were just passes gone awry.
Was he a bit spooked by Walker? He's like, I'm pretty fast, but I know Kyle Walker's faster than me. He's going to catch me no matter what.
I think that's why he didn't get the decision, because I think they kind of said, nah, he's looking for a free kick there rather than try and compete with Walker for this. I think that's what actually stood against him in that, because it could easily have been a foul. But I'm just looking at Rashford and thinking, you know, he obviously had written this thing last week in the Players' Tribune where he kind of justified himself. And he described himself as a 26-year-old lad in that, which I kind of thought, like...
Is that not accurate?
Well, he is a lad and he's 26, but like...
26-year-old lad.
Yeah, but the context of it was like, oh, you know, I'm a 26-year-old lad and I'm like, you're a senior player. You're one of the best paid players in the Premier League. You have to be better than this. I mean, okay, I'm this is more of a rant than a question. But what...
We might let one of our guests in at some point, but the two of us just keep talking.
Mark, when you're looking at Rashford, are you thinking, yeah, this guy is good enough to stick around and be part of the long term here? Or are you thinking, we can do better than this?
I think that yesterday, I don't really want to take that performance in isolation, because I think, you know, he was carrying a hip injury yesterday, been having it most of the week. But I can't disagree with you that other than the goal, like every decision that he had to make, every other opening that he got just wasn't happening for him. And I think that was really, if you want to talk about the performance yesterday, it was kind of just in keeping with his season, but also the player that he is. Like, we've seen this now, he's 26 years old, right? I think that still shocked quite a few people, that we know what to expect from Marcus Rashford now. We know that he's capable of moments of brilliance and catching lightning in a bottle and whatever. Sometimes even more so is when his back's up and he feels like he's got something to prove. But it's maintaining a consistent level of performance rather than in fits and starts. His career is just defined by these incredible runs, that, like we saw last season, but like we saw when he broke through as well, remember, like scoring every time he took the field and from absolutely out of nowhere. But then these are followed by huge dips in form that people really struggle to explain. And look, I think there's a lot of kind of entrenched opinions around him. I thought the reaction to that piece last week was really interesting. And like, because I think, I don't know what you think about the players drifting again, but I feel like those pieces are always written, they're obviously written to elicit a sympathetic response on the part of the subject, if you like. So you're meant to read them and you're meant to sympathise and empathise with their position and with their you know, background, where they're at, basically. And the reaction to it, I felt, was there was a lot of that, and there was a lot of valid points and a lot of valid things that Marcus Rashford said in that. But a lot of the reaction to it was, well, that's all well and good, but we're tired of hearing you say that. We need to see it happen. And I think that isn't what whoever's advised him to do that was expecting from that. I think normally those types of pieces, they usually get a reaction that's overwhelmingly positive. And I think people are just kind of tired of hearing him talk and want to see him do. And look, like, that response by scoring that goal yesterday, I mean, look, the narrative's written there for you. Neville was quoting it on commentary, wasn't he? He was quoting from the piece that he'd actually written about If You Doubt Me Even Better or whatever. So the narrative was there for him to to take hold of and to come storming back. And yet you follow it up with the performance that he had. It only means that we're all talking and having the same debate that we have about Marcus Rashford for years now.
I think there was always going to be a mixed reaction anyway. There always is with Rashford. You know, he says himself, I think there's a certain tone to criticism of him. Some of it goes back to the pandemic. And again, as he says, very reasonably, I was just trying to use my voice to make sure the kids weren't going hungry because I know exactly how it feels. But now, so there's always opposition to Rashford. There were always people back then saying, just shut up and play football, all those sorts of things. I think now it feels though it's more, he's lost some of his more ardent fans, maybe from those days, and it's not just people who are, he's essentially, a lot of Manchester United supporters are losing patience, and they might have been on his side and they want to be on his side, but performances on the pitch in a sporting arena are always going to be what counts for people in the end.
There's a nickname, isn't there, excuse me, that goes around, it's not very nice, is Saint Marcus. And the City fans call him that because, you know, God forbid that the star striker of your great rivals would be a philanthropist who does a lot for local society. But I have heard Manchester United fans refer to it as well, because they're saying, well, he can do all that, but he can't do it on the pitch. I think with the Players' Tribune, I get this sense of it. You're doing the Players' Tribune, you're losing, aren't you? It's been a hostage to fortune, that thing, hasn't it? When I think of the people that have done it over the years, it often hasn't gone that well after. Romelu Lukaku is one that I could think of. And in this instance, I don't think it changed many opinions, just as Marcus Rashford's performance in the Manchester Derby didn't change many opinions. What's going to change opinions is him playing better now. He did play through an injury. Let's give him that mitigation. He's not the player he could be. He's not the player we expected him to be.
Well, this is the thing that struck me yesterday, watching, especially, I think the comparison with Foden is really bad for him. Because he said in that piece, that this is Rashford, he talked again and again about his love of the club and his love of the game, and, you know, it's not money, it's the love of the game, plain and simple, right? Guardiola was saying this about Foden after the game as well. He was saying he just loves football. Like, people were saying, oh, Foden, why is he so amazing? And Guardiola was like, well, he loves football. I mean, Walker, I think, was saying similar things. The guy is basically just practicing, developing his game the whole time. And you can see that. You can see this consistent improvement every year with him. He gets better and better. He masters different positions. He's effective in all of them. You don't see that with Rashford. You know, he's 26, as he says. He's a lad. Is he going to do that Rashford thing that we've been familiar with since he was 18, 17? Or is it going to be one of those days when that doesn't happen? It's not like Foden, who's becoming like a total footballer who can do all kinds of different things. And just, you know, that to me, you know, one of them is talking about loving the game. The other one is actually showing, you know, I'm becoming a master of this.
Yeah. And also from a United point of view, the player they miss most is Rasmus Højlund, who essentially played in the position. Well, he didn't really have this weird formation, but I mean, that's the player they wanted to hold the ball up. And it's a game actually where if Rashford was carrying an injury, you wouldn't have played him. So you do feel slightly, maybe he was exposed at a point when he wasn't physically fit to play. But yeah, compare him to Foden. There is no comparison. The thing is, with Foden, it's this strange situation where, is he the best English player? Probably.
Bellingham? I mean,
Saka?
Okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of good English players at the moment, but he is.
But they all
there.
Play in a similar position, don't they? Yeah, they all play in that sort of slightly behind the striker position, don't they? But you play those three behind Harry Kane, and, you know, supply him with his legs, then, you know, you get very excited as an England fan. Actually, I don't get excited as an England fan. But, you know, Foden, in Premier League terms, is just, you know, is such a cut above as an English player, and he's also a player that you could see playing any era just because of the way that he plays the game. It's that sort of almost, it's the way that he plays, like that sort of, you know, it's Rooney-esque in the fact that you could see it being played in a schoolyard. You know, the way he sort of skates through people, he plays with his head up, and yeah. There's that enjoyment of when he's scoring goals. Marcus Rashford scores a goal and it's this moment of great vindication. Foden scores and he does that rather odd celebration in which he reaches for a bow and then fires a gun. But we don't quite know what that's aimed at. But there was some explanation that he's known as the sniper by Cal. Yeah. I wonder why he's known as a sniper. Let's not go into that at this point. There seems to be a lot of giggling about that between those two. But anyway, what a player. What a player. And Pep Guardiola must be very, very hard to play for. We all know that. But if Pep Guardiola is produced, that's the thing. If you play for Pep Guardiola and you're good enough, he can make you into a player like Foden. And that is one of the problems that Rashford's had, is he's never had the coach that can make him into the player that he could be. Or he's got the coach that's got into his head and made him that player. And weirdly enough, the manager I think that most got into his head was probably Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And, well, that didn't work out elsewhere, did it?
Yeah, I mean, it is stranger and stranger when you look back at it. I think Solskjaer had three wins away to City. I mean, he did lose to them a lot as well, but I think you take that compared to what seems to be the situation now, where it just feels as though Man United are incapable of giving them a game. But it wasn't obviously the only game this weekend. There was a few others. One of them that caused a lot of controversy was another scandal, a refereeing scandal. The second in two games at the City Ground in Nottingham. And I just wonder, Mark, what do you make of this new trend that Nottingham Forest have established of Premier League clubs hiring celebrity ref lobbyists to state their case, as Mark Clattenburg was doing in the Mix Zone after this game, where he came out and talked about the laws of the game and said that apparently the owner wasn't happy, something which people might have been able to work out for themselves by the presence of the furious owner on the sideline. But this is an interesting development.
Yeah, I don't know what... I think, you know, speaking from experience, I can tell when somebody is trying to justify their bullshit job, and that is what... that is what it seemed to be the purpose behind Mark Clattenburg's appearance in that mix out of the, you know, he was saying like he's going to hold a meeting with the board and the PGMOL and try and bang some heads together or whatever. I was like, this guy clearly didn't expect to actually have to do anything in this role, and now has been thrown into the middle of apparently a kind of multi-layer conspiracy to win Liverpool the league title or whatever it is. I don't know. I'm kind of exhausted by all this stuff now. The weekly kind of churn of just another half-baked conspiracy theory. I don't know. Like, I think if this thing was hinging on Darwin Núñez finishing a chance in the 99th minute of stoppage time, I think then PGM OL have got away with one there, because it's not the most foolproof of conspiracies to try and act, to be honest.
No, you can still see why Forest fans would be pissed off, though.
I don't know. I've watched this incident so many times, and from different perspectives, like there's a question over what exactly happens in whether it's Kelleher, whether it's, I think, was it, I can't remember which Forest player it was. Was it Yates who might put a boot in Konate's face or something? Or
it was Yates.
I can understand the rules are there in place, and that maybe, look, the drop ball should have gone to Forest rather than Liverpool. Fair enough. But we're talking about an action that came like 2 minutes. The goal follows 2 minutes afterwards.
Yeah.
There's so many different contingencies within that 2 minutes.
Well, Forest cleared the ball out of play twice. In that, like, Kelleher just bombed out up the pitch, and they played it around, then Forrest booted it out for a throw-in, and then it went...
Yeah, but there's very little time on the board. If Forrest were given the ball and given a chance to attack, Liverpool mightn't even have had another attack.
Forrest had five touches, five times.
If given the ball as Kelleher was, under no pressure, with a chance to knock the ball around a bit and secure the point.
There's just a lot of hypotheticals here. We're just saying the word if over and over again, and I think, literally... If this had happened, if that had happened, like, what happened, I think, was separate enough from the defining moment of the game to perhaps not make it into such a huge controversy as it seems to have become. I think Ken's rightly asked the opening question about this, on the fact that a Premier League club has hired a referee's advisor or assistant or whoever, who clearly has relationships with referees who are still in the game, who has a relationship with Howard Webb, PGMOL. That is a slightly more sinister than a fairly routine decision that may well have gone the wrong way, but I don't know if it had a material impact on the result of the game.
John, what do you think?
On that point, I was going to say, speaking to someone over the weekend, the newspaper that employs Mark Klattenberg to give his exclusive opinions on refereeing were rather surprised by his employment by Nottingham Forest as their referee's spokesman. I wonder how Gladiators took it.
He had a great performance in Gladiators again at the weekend. He's got Viper in his back pocket there, John. It's top stuff. Some people retire, they don't know what to do with themselves. Mark Klattenberg finishes refereeing. He's a Renaissance man. But honestly, it is a bit... to be honest... It seems like, in some ways, quite a smart thing to do, to appoint somebody who is an expert in refereeing, who can tell you behind the scenes, you know, how to get on referee's good side, and just give you a clear understanding of what the actual rules are, which people are confused by on quite a consistent basis. So in some ways, it's a pretty smart move by Nottingham Forest. I don't know, though, this addition of him now coming out as a spokesperson on it is another layer altogether.
The football world gets stranger and stranger. Mark knows the mix zone better than I do. Perhaps it's always one of those curious places where, you know, deals are struck and whenever these things are going to appear. But the idea of Klattenberg just appearing in there to give his word, normally you can't get anyone to speak to anybody. So, you know, maybe he should be welcomed. But imagine if every club appoints their own referee to do this. Mm. What situation are we going to have there? And, you know, again, it feeds into this obsession we seem to have with football at the moment of re-refereeing every game. That's one of VAR's greatest legacies, is that no game can be just taken as, oh, well, that one's done. We've got to re-referee it after, you know. And call me old school, call me, a Luddite or whatever, but I just prefer to get on with it.
Yeah. John, Mark, we'll let you get on with your day now. Thanks a million.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Never forget the true nature of this city.
Listen, you screwheads.
Here is a man
Michael.
Who would not take it anymore. A man who stood up against the scum, the dogs, the filth. Here is someone who stood up.
And this bike, by the way, I'd only had for 2 weeks. What happened to it? Dublin happened to it. Dublin has kicked the shit out of the bike.
There was a few minutes when I blithely believed that I lived in a civilized city. I arrived home. It was already dark. There was rain and mud everywhere.
Oh my God, this town!
So I thought to myself, no need to drag my bike through the house, given that all I'm doing is, you know, getting changed and getting myself and going to the pool. So I'll just leave it here beside the front door. Not on the street. I was in the house for probably for 8 to 10 minutes.
What tobacco is it? I don't know. I haven't put tobacco in ages. Just give me some.
And there's nobody on the street. And it's dark. And there's not even any foot traffic. Open the door. Bike's gone.
Oh my God, this town.
It's actually been taken from outside my front door in an 8 minute period of being unguarded. And this bike, by the way, I'd only had for 2 weeks. This bike was given to me by my brother.
Oh my God, this town.
And I'm thinking, why? What happened to it? Dublin happened to it.
Never forget the true nature of this city.
Brano, crank up that teleporter. Ken Early, can you read me?
Yeah, how are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. You're just outside.
You survived the teleportation process, aren't you?
Aviva Stadium there, how was it?
How was the press conference? Yeah. It was good. It was nice, you know, just John O'Shea and chatting away. Seems to be in good form. Yeah, he seems happy enough with the situation. I mean, you know, Mark Canham was there as well, talking smoothly about the process, which is all under control. He assures us it's all pretty much signed and sealed and ready to go with the new manager. It's just that due to existing contractual obligations, he can't reveal who that person is. However, in early April, we'll have more news.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit what Canham had to say.
The process of the appointment of the permanent new head coach is very close to the end and nearing its end point, and we look forward to announcing that new permanent head coach in early April. Existing contractual obligations mean that we're not in a position to announce any further details on this point, but as we've committed to, we will announce that in early April. So, as I've said before, the process has been ongoing for a period of time and been given a series of updates quite recently, actually. We're really near the end of the process. That's obviously confidential, so I can't answer your question directly, unfortunately. But we're at a really advanced stage of the process. And for different practical reasons, and including contracts, we can't confirm that until early April.
So it sounds like they have their man, Ken?
I mean, that's definitely the impression that Mark Canham was leaving us with. But for some reason, the person can't admit that they've agreed to take this job until after the international break, I suppose, which finishes at the end of March. So I don't know if I don't know what other significant dates come up at the sort of end of March, early April time in the football calendar. I don't know. When does maybe I should have checked when the Saudi season finishes out.
No, we've already we've been checking the Saudi season. That's got a bit to run there. So I don't know if Slaven Bilic is going to be our guy. I mean, Lee Carsley is the obvious one there. Lee Carsley's got the England under 21 games, and a slightly more outside the box one. Gus Poyet might be out of the Greece job by the end. But Carsley's the one. I mean, that's...
Well,
still on the table, surely.
It's the obvious one. But then there's also, you know...
the Portugal coach.
Yeah, Anthony Portugal Barry, coach. We hardly knew ye, writes the Portuguese press.
Yeah. There's a Portugal coach out there as well. He might be. And obviously a Bayern Munich coach. But, you know, I suppose they've got... You know, Xabi Alonso's 10 points clear now, Owen. Xabi Cousin are 10 points clear with 10 games to go. So, maybe that's all going to be done and dusted by early April. Who knows?
Go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a couple of questions sort of trying to wheedle a bit more information at Canham in terms of, you know, does the person have, you know, brown hair?
Do they play the electric guitar in a soft rock band?
Yeah. But he kind of just kept sort of repeating his line about existing obligations, respect the process, respect the candidates who've been in the process. You know, I mean, I suppose, and respect the fact that obviously a deal isn't actually done yet. You know, maybe we've got a handshake, but as you know, handshakes have a way of, hey, you know, if they're a moment in time, they can be lost like tears in rain. So, so yeah, I guess there's a certain reluctance to just go in there and scream the name from the rooftops now, whoever that name is. But I mean, but judging by the kind of way that, you know, this is like clearly a post-international break. Not that Canham did not mention after the international break, but it just so happens that obviously the timing sort of lines up with that. Then the two kind of people who have been kind of linked with the job sort of over the longer arc of time are Lee Carsey and Anthony Barry, and maybe that's what we're looking at.
I thought it was a bit of a weird experience for John O'Shea, because he's being asked about his own interests. Obviously, you know, if these games go well, do you think you could be in the running? And despite it seeming very clear that Mark Cannon was saying somebody else will be the full-time manager, John O'Shea wasn't silly enough to rule himself out. He was saying, well, you know, my focus is on these two games, and you know, the may the cards fall where they may, and whatever, you know. So it was a little bit of a strange, but we'll play a clip from John O'Shea to hear the voice of our new interim manager talking about the appointment of his technical advisor, Brian Kerr's role.
Obviously, this is going back a long time, the relationship obviously I have with Brian, and it was a collaborative approach with myself and Mark. Obviously, when Mark spoke to Mark, and obviously we were bouncing ideas off about staff, different things, procedures, and names were coming up, and obviously when I heard Brian's name, I was like, yes, that sounds right to me, because I know, having spoken to him, obviously his enthusiasm, and not only that, his knowledge will be invaluable to not only the coaching staff but to the players as well. And obviously he's been in constant contact as well quite recently too, so I can't wait to, obviously, for the players to kind of get to know his knowledge too, and to see what he's all about in terms of preparation for a game, and obviously just how the reaction he gets from people too, you know. So I know he'll be a big boost for everyone involved.
I'll fetch a ball down, Bush.
Oh, he'll be fit by the end of the week.
So there you go, a little bit of John O'Shea there. Ken, thank you for your service.
Hey, Owen, anytime, you know, I'm always ready to help you out with a chat about these topics.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Kira.
We've got to mention Timo Werner got his first goal for Tottenham. We must honour the main man on his big day. So here you go. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in the World Service for some independent member-led broadcasting. All episodes are ad-free in the World Service. And the Second Captain's podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Einen Bruder, er wird Timo genannt. Ich bin stolz, er ist überall bekannt. Timo kommt aus Leipzig, ist ein Torgarant. Timo Werner spielt für unser Land. Timo Werner ist kein Uhrensohn. Timo Werner ist kein Uhrensohn.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home. Those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.